from Burbank, California, home to Jay Leno's monologue. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now he's leading this court on a fishing expedition. Mark Maron!
That is exactly what I'm doing. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor who like to write me emails. Good evening to you. How are you lurking conservatives, environmentalists who might want to turn the radio off or shut your computer down because you're probably wasting some energy listening to this right now. Or maybe get on the ham radio. I think the ham radio uses a little less energy, Jim.
You know, if you took that little battery out of your watch, you could save a lot of energy.
I did. The only problem is my sundial won't work now. I can see the Wiener Schnitzel from here, man. I can see the Wiener Schnitzel just yonder past where Jay Leno does his Wiener Schnitzel show every day.
You know, if they took the schnitz out of the schnitzel, they could save a lot of energy.
Oh, that's a good one, man. That's a good one.
Oh, shut up. You going to start with me already?
Take the schnitz out of the schnitzel. That's funny. Hey, Jim.
Yes?
Whatever you've opened, whatever Pandora's box you've opened, man, it is not stopping. The emails keep coming. The feud between you and Lori David, that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
but people are sharing their views of the situation. It is a provocative thing. You know, it doesn't have to be all about current news, current politics. You know, how do we impeach Bush? We've got to impeach Bush. You know, that's fine. We can do that. But in people's hearts and in their day-to-day lives, they are dealing with their own guilt about how much they waste, what things they can do to change their lives to make them a more environmentally friendly human being on this planet, as opposed to just say, hey, what's the point, man? Don't unplug cell phone chargers. What the difference does that make?
You know, other than killing themselves, it's the most immediately effective thing they can do to help
the
environment.
Holy mackerel. I had no idea that was an option in the environmentalist pantheon to go ahead and kill yourself.
It is.
So it says that if you really want to save energy and help the planet, kill yourself.
First, pull out your charger plugs, though.
Yeah, pull out your charger plugs and hang yourself with them.
That's right, because you're pulling a lot of energy yourself.
Pulling a lot of energy. Well, here's some, we got some emails, and I'll share them with you. Folks, if you're just tuning in, it's about coming up on 10 past the hour. You are listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. I am Mark Maron. The blog party has begun at markmaron.com, markmaron.com. We've got a good show tonight. We've got Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. We're going to call him. From theleftcoaster.com, Steve Soto is going to, you know, parse the news with me in our Power Crunch News segment, where we're going to talk about the issues, what's at stake, what's happening, what can we do. I got some questions I got to ask him about the effects of Bush's speech. I want to talk a little bit about the ports deal, maybe the Feingold proposal to censure. Going to get into that stuff, man, because it's important, Jim. Also, we have U.S. travel correspondent for the Times of London and BBC radio correspondent Jane Busman will tell us about the time she got sued by Ashton Kutcher and trapped in Uganda. We'll let her explain that. And also, she did some filmmaking. She has spent some time in the Sudan I got to get the guy's name, but she is a very brilliant person, this woman, Jane Busman. I'm looking forward to talking to her. She does a lot of comedy films, but she does some very cutting documentary films. We've got the Dick of the Day. Apparently you're going to do some poetry later, Jim.
Yes, I have a poem.
Let's get to this right now. The emails around and about I don't think the feud's going to happen. I think Lori David has moved on. I think that she does not want to engage with us, even though I've defended her and I'm a fan of hers. And Jim just wants to talk about meat a little bit. I don't think she's coming back around. Here's some emails, Jim. Quick one. Just says, subject, Jim, is he vegan?
No, I'm not.
Oh, so, not vegan.
I would like to be.
You would? Why aren't you?
You know, it is a lot of trouble at the moment.
To be vegan?
Yes.
That's all you're going to give us? Is it the personal thing?
You know, it can be expensive to be a vegetarian, too, unless you have the time to make all these things from scratch. Then it isn't very expensive.
Really?
But you got to spend a lot of time making your own food.
It's so hard to make the veggie bacon. I don't even know how the hell they do that. You have to press soy product into bacon, then paint it. Do you make your own soy bacon?
You got to take a real pig and then cram asparagus down its throat.
Really? That's how they do it? That doesn't sound right.
I don't make
Here's another one. Here's another one. Subject, the environment. Dear Mark, as much as it may not be true that leaving the cell phone charger plugged in is wasting energy, the following is true. For any type of office, corporate or home, leaving the computer on over the weekend will waste electricity.
Even when asleep?
Yeah. This is a common practice of offices, and energy bills just pile up. Even though putting computers in sweep mode will save some amount of energy, it will never conserve as much energy as leaving the computer off over the weekends. Jim also has a good point about beef consumption, which puts pressure on the fresh water supply and pressure on the land required to produce livestock feed. But it is also unrealistic to enforce the rule that everybody should become vegetarians. Instead, I propose a more realistic solution. Eat a vegetarian meal once a week. If every person in the U.S. is willing to replace one meal a week with a vegetarian meal, one-third of the livestock feed will not be needed. That amount, ironically, will be sufficient to feed every hungry person in the continent of Africa. Thanks for reading.
Well, that's an interesting thing. One-third. I don't know where he comes up. That's a hard calculation to make. But
this is a consumption-based culture, and that feed has already been divvied up to feed the hungry animals. So this type of logic would be all fine and dandy if they could just say, hey, we're not using this. Let's make bread out of it and ship it to Africa. But that's not the issue. The stuff's already created and is just probably going to turn into garbage. So until the entire paradigm is shifted to accommodate that type of waste and make it into something people can eat, this type of speculation only does something to raise consciousness. It doesn't do, you know, we're going to talk to somebody later this week. When is she coming on? The woman, Heather, the woman who wrote the garbage book, tomorrow. This is fascinating. This woman wrote a brilliant book about garbage, about what happens to your garbage and the taxing nature of that on the environment and the groundwater and everything else.
Yeah.
It's a great book. Let's keep going with these real quick.
Well,
we take our time.
If you're gonna cut down on if you're only gonna eat one vegetarian meal a week, that's like taking it back to 1920 or something. And we got to take it back to the 1880s when people were primarily vegetarians. They didn't eat meat that much.
To hell with that. Let's take it back to year one of human civilization. Start picking berries. Come on, man. Let's go all the way back. Make yourself a pouch and let's go berry picking, me and you.
Sure, you're mockingly saying that, but I'd go pick berries with you anytime, Mark.
Yeah.
That's
nice.
Let's go pick berries tomorrow.
Another email.
Come on, put your money where your mouth is, fella.
I'll go pick berries.
Let's pick berries tomorrow.
I'll skip and pick berries.
You're scared to pick berries.
I will not pick berries. I will not be afraid to pick berries with another man. I'm not afraid of berry picking.
Nude?
I'm not afraid to go with you. Nude, whatever you want. Whatever you want, if you just tell me whether or not that's your real hair color. Just tell me.
It's my real hair color.
All right. Here's something from the blog. All right? This would be good read if you want to continue the Lori David conversation. Oh, that's what you wrote to me. Okay. Here we go. But if you really want to make a difference, here we go. I think the whole environmental thing, I think it is important to make conscious choices in your daily life that's intentional living and good for your soul. But if you really want to make a difference in the grand scheme of things, it's even more important to work on the larger picture, doing things to help change the way decisions are made in laws and regulations. Voting, IOW, voting and more collective efforts and changing our government's leaders' actions and attitudes. What's IOW mean?
In other words,
I'm sorry, I'm not hip to this whole, I have to decode everything. Why can't people write words? I know it's quicker, but not criticizing. So yeah, of course it's cool that Jim and many others have the integrity to lead a environmentally conscious lifestyle. And at the same time, it's really important that Lori David is pressuring government leaders and big media companies to get the message out and organizing people to make their voices heard. In other words, why the pissing contest?
It's not a pissing hunt. You know what it is? It's almost one quarter. I'm going to round up to one quarter because I believe that the figures are underinflated. You know, it's one quarter of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, comes from manufacturing meat.
All right, but the bottom line...
80% of the groundwater in California goes to making meat, and that is a figure I read in the L.A. Times 10 years ago. It's got to be much worse now. 50% of the water in America goes to making meat, and our underwater aquifers are poisoned with hog manure.
They're poisoned with garbage. They're garbage juice as well, and they're poisoned with lithium and valium and everything else.
Kids
that comes
up
out
and
of
down
our pee.
The Central Valley are suffering from asthma because of methane gas from domesticated animals, and it's because we're all suffering conspicuous consuming gluttonous
but
pigs
let me ask
in
you
this
question.
Country, and it's the corporate meat.
All right, let me ask you a question.
It's meat America. It's the corporate.
I get it. But let me ask you a question. Isn't it important? I understand what you're saying, and I understand that working from that level is a good place to work from. But isn't it also important that anything that's going to get done in this country, someone's got to shift that paradigm on a legislative level and stop the meat lobby from hiding things like mad cow, from hiding the
facts? People got to be educated first, and they got to look at themselves and become self-aware. They got to look in the mirror, look in the refrigerator, and say, what the hell am I doing to myself?
And, wow, that steak looks good. Maybe I'll just not eat it and throw it in the garbage.
antibiotic impregnated bacteria infested steak.
No. What about that nice organic? It ate fancy grains.
Organic or schmanic? You know, it's a very little difference.
You can get a steak now that was autoerotically asphyxiated and right at the moment of orgasm killed nicely, gently smothered with a silk scarf, and it's so tender. It's a Japanese type of meat.
We'd be better off just eating humans.
I'll start with you, because I've about had it.
I'm very tender.
I doubt you are. You know what? Just by judging by your personality, brittle.
Brittle?
Brittle.
You know, I'm just trying to help people.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's special New York edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. The NYPD is installing 505 surveillance cameras throughout the city to help keep track of criminal activity. And out of the 505, more than half will be installed within the NYPD. New York University has once again topped Harvard and Yale as the dream school of high school students in the nation. By dream school, they mean the classrooms would be like the house they lived in when their parents were married, but also like Starbucks, and they wouldn't be pants on anybody, but no one would notice. And then the teacher would be this chick that they had a crush on in third grade, but half dragon, and then everything would turn into pudding. A coyote braved the wilds of Manhattan for 2 days before being captured this morning in Central Park. The coyote was particularly hard to catch as he was wearing roller skates and a rocket pack. Park rangers were able to knock the coyote unconscious by painting a fake Holland Tunnel on a brick wall. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight, my friends. Yeah, so Jim, you're going to sing. Are you in the mood to sing, though? Because you were pretty worked up. Put some of that energy?
I'm a professional, all right?
No, some of that energy in the song, man. Make it passionate. Make it angry, man.
I can't. It's not a passionate, angry song.
All right, well, then just sing.
Mark Maron's on the fourth floor working at a news station, and the only explanation I can find is some guys on the blog got real mad and crapped a log, and now their love put him on top of the world.
That was terrific, man.
Thanks.
That was really terrific. We're going to come back in just a second. We're going to talk to Steve Soto from the leftcoast.com. We're going to get into the issues, the real issues, my friends. And we got Lawton Smalls coming up and Jane Bussman. I'm very excited about this show. It's about 20 past. Hang out.
Don't go away, because Mark's about to get another insightful look at current events from an emotionally disturbed man named Lawton Smalls.
And now he's hoarding gold in his pants. Mark Maron.
I am not doing that. That's Ed Schultz and Randy Rhodes. They're hoarding gold in their pants.
They love gold.
Apparently they do the ads for it. I haven't been asked. I have not been asked to start my very own gold coin collection. Have not been asked. But listen, I think you're right what you said on the break, which nobody heard, which was I'm all jacked up on the hormones from not being able to stay off the meat for 6 months. You're right. You're right. But I'm telling you, I'm barking up the right tree again today. I made a pot of chickpeas, created some hummus. Made some brown rice, simmered some tofu and ginger broth and miso.
That sounds great.
Yeah, you want to come over for dinner and we'll bury the hatchet and we'll talk about, we'll talk about real stuff. And,
I think we're all, we kind of agree on most things.
And you'll tell me your henna secrets?
I didn't, just because.
Okay, I'll let it go.
A long time ago I said that you had a hair problem.
Over and over and over again. Every opportunity that you could on our old show, you insinuated.
Best tube in the business.
That I've got a fake hair.
Well, it is really plush.
I don't have fake hair.
It's like you look.
I'm
like
not going to get insecure about
Fabio.
This. It's ridiculous. Exactly. Nathan, there's a little bit of gray. I'm not ashamed. Let's get on with this. Let's get our friend on the phone. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that listeners know what's going on in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is our very own Planet Push Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Hello, Lawton.
Hello, Mark. You know, God's got his own name for March Madness. Secular humanism. Stick that in your bracket, Gonzaga.
All right. Here's something your boy Bush said at a press conference Tuesday about Iraq, my friend.
Secondly, I'm confident, or I believe, I'm optimistic we'll succeed. If not, I'd pull our troops out.
Help me out with this. Why is this guy so optimistic? About what, Lawton?
Mark, this may surprise you, but optimism isn't some mythical creature like a unicorn or a jackalope or a liberal that doesn't use on-demand abortion as their primary form of birth control.
Oh, yes, that does surprise me, Lawton, because you're so much smarter than I am.
Now, Mark, there's no need to run yourself down like that, okay? It's just that millions and millions of folks who aren't poisoned by gay agenda defeatism are feeling pretty darn good about this liberation. And who can blame them? That optimism is the inevitable result of this administration's incredibly successful policies over there. You don't mess with a winning streak.
What are you out of your mind? What winning streak?
Mark, it's as hard as Chinese arithmetic. 2 and 2 is 4. 3 and 3 is 6. President George W. two-terms mandate Bush plus Iraq equals optimism. Case closed. Semper Fi.
Whoa. What about the car bombings, Wadden? Every day, sectarian violence, civil war, Abu Ghraib. You'll forgive me if I'm not as optimistic as your fearless leader, my friend.
Well, I forgive you, Mark, as a Christian. You know, being around you has given me a real insight into how it must be for y'all, being a liberal and all that. It's no way to live.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean?
Doom and gloom, blame game. Oh, no, increased greenhouse gases are leading us to a global environmental cataclysm. Junk like that. Nothing's ever good enough for you. The glass is always half empty, with a layer of spit and boogers around the rim.
Now, wait a minute. We are just realists, Lawton, okay? Unlike you, we believe in facts, my friend.
You're toxic with negativity.
Liberals are not that negative, Lawton.
No. I'll bet you can't say one nice thing about President George W. two-terms mandate Bush. Now, can you? Go on, little Mary Sunshine. I dare you. Make with the nice talk. Say something nice. I'm waiting. Anytime. Waiting on your word.
I don't know.
TikTok.
I can't.
One word.
I can't do it.
This is so sad. So sad. And you have so much to be optimistic about.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
So much.
Like what? It's not a rock, that's for sure.
Well, you got your health.
Yeah.
And you've got a radio program, sort of, after the Clippers came. You've got a wife who loves you and who cares for you.
What the hell's going on? What's going on? I didn't even say anything. What's the matter with you?
God is a president. He's too stupid to recognize a catastrophe when it stared him in his stupid face.
Yeah.
And Mark.
Yeah.
I got this weird lump on my inner thigh.
Oh man.
It's getting all orangey and yellow and ruddy.
Oh God.
They'll probably have to saw my leg off.
Oh man.
Ashes.
All right.
It's getting dark.
All right. Take it easy. It's probably just a rash or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should I stop picking at it with tweezers?
Yes.
I'm doing that.
Oh, don't do that. Stop picking at the orange lump on your inner thigh with tweezers. It's probably nothing. Just pull it together.
Hurts.
Please.
It hurts.
I know, but just leave it alone.
You sure it'll be okay?
Yes.
Not one positive word, Mark. Not even you're thin or I like your haircut.
Okay.
Nothing.
All right.
Typical. You know, I'm optimistic about everything except your soul.
All right, Lawton. All right.
Turn that frown around,
all right.
Mister.
Goodbye, Lawton. Goodbye.
God loves you. Deal with it.
I don't know what I'm going to do with that guy. And now he just falls apart. I don't even have to yell at him. He just falls apart. Man, I'm not going to act like I'm concerned. Look, folks, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking to the LeftCoaster.com publisher, Steve Soto. He's going to help me with this week's news crunch, get to the bottom of some stuff. And later in the show, we're going to be talking to Jane Busman from the Times of London. Stay with us. It's about 30 past.
Now,
now you can call him up for a free brochure. Mark Maron.
I would send you the brochure over the internet if there's something wrong with the blog. So, I don't know. You're out there. You're suspended in space wishing there was a blog, but I think the main Air America site has crashed late night. It's a late night computer crash in New York at Air America Central. Who knew that there'd be problems at that place? Am I right? Hey, look, folks. You're listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. You can call us if you want, but you know, hold off on it because I'm going to bring something up we can talk about a little later. But the number is 877-520-1150. We got a lot of stuff coming up, but right now it's my pleasure to introduce now the Mark Maron Show News Crunch. This is when someone who understands everything tries to get me to understand most of it or as much as I can in 10 minutes. Joining me for tonight's crunch is the creator and managing editor of theleftcoaster.com, which describes itself as an out-of-the-beltway perspective on current events. Outside the Beltway perspective on current events, politics, media, and the arts. Steve Soto, good evening. Are you ready to do the news crunch with me here?
Mark, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. I try to keep up, and I think I'm on top of most things. I guess what I'm gleaning by listening to the radio and reading the papers today is that there's still some an aftermath to Bush's press conference yesterday. He's sticking to his story, and it makes him look even more delusional than ever, yes?
Yeah, it does, and I think it's all... This week has been a pretty good example of what the strategy is going to be between now and November.
And what is that exactly?
Well, I think what's going on is these guys are finally petrified about the slide in the polls, and they're realizing that, for God's sakes, they're about to see some erosion in the base. And up until the time that they saw some erosion in the base, they probably thought they could gut this out and browbeat their own members to get through to November.
Mm-hmm.
But all the polls have been going the wrong way for the better part of 6 months. And in actuality, he's been heading downhill since he tried the Social Security garbage last year.
So he's at like 33%. Now, you're basically telling me if the GOP is going to align themselves still with this president, given that his poll ratings are so low and his commitment to a war that in the public's eye has become a disaster, I mean, is there any possibility that the Republicans, the GOP, are actually setting him up so they can distance themselves from him effectively?
Well, I think what they're doing is they're keeping a close eye on him and the polls, because I think what's going on, first thing on Monday, he comes out and does the thing in Cleveland in front of a more or less real audience and does real questions and answers, gets lit up on a couple of questions, and doesn't exactly, shall we say, manage the high wire act too well.
Mm-hmm.
So at least that's supposed to show the public that he's not afraid sitting in the Rose Garden. He's willing to come on out and mix it up and defend himself. So they, you know, the White House figures, okay, that's a good first step, even though it didn't exactly go as well as they wanted it to. The next strategy, which I think they clearly showed yesterday, that they're going to run on between now and November, is blame the media. So yesterday, what does he do? He trots out the press conference. He comes on out. He gets into it with Helen Thomas, of all people, who almost hands him his lunch. And like you said, he looks delusional in the process and then goes the one step further that I'm not sure it was in the script or not. When they asked him point blank, well, how long are we going to be there? And instead of saying, we'll be there as long as the generals tell me that we'll be there, or instead of saying what he's been saying, which is we'll stand down when the Iraqis stand up, he basically puts his neck through the noose and says, we're going to be there at least as long as I'm in the office.
And let whoever's the next president clean it up.
Right, which does two things, as I was mentioning today on the blog. The first thing it does, it hangs out his own party, because all these incumbents were hoping that he would just look tough while still giving the appearance of not actually doing the actual withdrawal in significant numbers between now and November, so that they could all go back to their people and say, we're not cutting and running, we're hanging tough, but we realize we need to let these Iraqis deal with it themselves and bring our guys home. So what did Bush do yesterday? He basically comes out and says, he sticks a finger in the press's eye and goes back to the machismo stuff and says, no one's going to push me out of there. We'll be there at least as long as I'm in there.
See, I think that on some level, Steve Soto, that this is all that president knows how to do, is that he knows one thing for sure, is that he believes that being a commander-in-chief is going to hold on to enough of the people that are important to him. I don't think he's got a real pulse on reality with this. That's why I can't help but think that on some level, a lot of Republicans must be saying, look, we're going to be able to distance ourselves from this president come the 2006 election.
Well, I think you may be right, but the thing I want to keep my eye on in the next 10 days to mm-hmm. 2 weeks is take a look at the approval polls, the polls for the next 10 days to 2 weeks. What I'm thinking is happening is, like I said, they're scared about the erosion in the base. If you have concern in the White House that your base support is eroding, you've got two things to worry about in November. The first is that base may stay home and not vote. And second, that feeds into what the point you're making, which is the party's incumbents up for re-election this year will continue to see the bad poll numbers and will decide to start separating themselves from him during the summer.
And I know that they're going to use this Feingold proposal to character assassinate any Democrat, even though only a few of them jumped on board with that, and even though it was a reasonable idea to censure the president. You know that these guys are going to be like, they want to impeach him.
Yeah, and that's because it plays into their – I mean, they need to take whatever the Democrats do in the next 2 or 3 months and overhype it just to make themselves still look rational and reasonable, even though Feingold goes back into his own rural districts in the last couple of days and ends up getting well-received by what could be classified as red state voters back in his own state.
Because he's an honest guy.
He's an honest guy, and he's gotten Republican votes in his state. I mean – you know, one thing has been proven is that you can have principles, you can stand up, even if it's not a popular position, as long as people know what you're willing to stand up and fight for, and you appear to have good judgment.
Yeah, I think it's going to serve him well in the long run. If Feingold does run, whatever his chances may be, he's one of the only guys, if not the only guy, that can say, I was against the war, I was against the Patriot Act, and I wanted to get this guy out of office. And I think that's going to mean something in 2008.
It's going to mean something in 2008, because if you take a look at the rest of the field, he's going to obviously approach this as running from the what he would probably call the reasonable left in the party to Hillary's left. And I think he's setting himself up that way.
Now, what do you think about the Democratic field? How's that panning out? We've got Hillary Clinton. We've got Warner from Virginia. We've got, do you think Joe Biden's going to run, or Al Gore?
Biden said apparently yesterday or the day before he is running. He confirmed that he's running. Biden's one of those guys that every now and then he says something great, and you think to yourself, why couldn't this guy have engaged and actually been a good package years ago?
I feel the same way, yeah. Before what?
Before the Neil Kinnock thing, where he was plagiarizing Neil Kinnock's stuff back in the 88 race, and also
his voting record is not tremendous, you know, on the credit card companies, on the bankruptcy bills. I mean, yeah. He is sort of, owned by the credit card companies.
He's MBNA Joe.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's going to hurt him in the long run. What do you think? Hillary has a real shot at this?
I think she's got a shot at it. I mean, she's basically, according to the New York Daily News the other day, she got a muzzle on Bill to where Bill's not going to be speaking out on any issues like Dubai anymore without running it through her first, because she wants to make sure nothing shoots her, kneecaps her.
Yeah, that's interesting, because Bill is a not-so-in-the-closet globalist, and I think that a lot of those big money people are people who have spent their life pandering to big moneyed interests refuse to go with the people on that one.
I agree with you. Obviously, she's got a lot of built-in advantages. We and a couple other people wrote some similar thoughts last week that she's basically got all the advantages you would have if you were a vice president running for the job yourself, or a vice president running after a one-term out running for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a way, she's running as if she was Mondale or running as if she was Gore without actually being the vice president. She's going to have the money. She's going to have the organization. The problem she's got is she's Hillary Clinton. That may play well in some parts of the party. It's not going to play well, possibly countrywide. And the other part of it is that they haven't done a very good job reaching out to the Internet community, which I know people at times think that, you know, the Internet community, the blog world, is overstated, and I'm not saying it isn't necessarily. But the whole package, I mean, the Democrats need to have the whole package aboard to really make a dent and defeat some of the advantages the Republicans have.
Well, that frightens me just to hear those two words together, that the Democrats, or three words or however many it is, the Democrats have to have the whole package together.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Oh, before I get off of this topic quickly, it looks to me he's definitely going to run, right?
Well, I thought so. Yesterday he told, the day before, the Associated Press ran a story saying that he gave hoping would be a clear answer that he's not running or not interested in running in 2008, but wasn't forswearing politics in the future. As soon as he said that, there were two or three of the magazines and websites back east that did a good job parsing what he said, and they think what he's doing, and I think there's some credence to it, he's not going to actively run between now and, say, New Hampshire. He's going to sit there and see if anyone else springs up, like a Feingold from the left, or even possibly a Warner, who I think is going to try and obviously run as the I don't want to say to the right of Hillary, but that's probably where he'll end up, is running from the right to the right of Hillary to see who's going to actually be the anybody but Hillary candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And he may wait until as late as New Hampshire before he figures out if he wants to jump in, because the one thing Gore can probably do that the other ones can't is he would immediately pull in a whole bunch of money on the Internet.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right about the blogosphere in essence, that I think they can manifest some cultural momentum without a doubt. No matter who wants to trivialize it, it's a real thing.
Right. And Gore's in a position where he's got the brand name ID, so to speak, within the party. He could wait very, very late in this game before he decides to raise his hand and say, I think we need a different choice.
That'd be amazing, too, because he's all full of piss and vinegar now. He's just wired for sound, and he's talking like a preacher.
Well, he's got that. Plus, the other thing is that it came out, I guess, in one of the papers back east that some of the people who are banking Hillary's reelection run this year have already told the campaign do not count on them actually bankrolling her in 2008.
Wow.
That they're either being noncommittal or they're actually committing themselves elsewhere. And a couple of those folks have been identified since then as saying specifically they're sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what Gore does.
All right, that's amazing. It's almost like a horse race to them.
Yeah, it is. And they're going to hang off and wait.
Well, look, Steve Soto, the blog is theleftcoast.com. I wanted to get into a little bit about that stuff you wrote about the Dubai, Saudi Arabia, moving some of their money out of American petrodollars into euros. But I think I'll go ahead and let people, check out the blog for that. I appreciate you joining us. Hope we can do this again.
You're on, Mark. Take good care of yourself.
Okay. Take care, Steve.
Thank you.
Yep. So, you should go to his blog because I didn't know about that bit of news there. But there is a sense that Saudi Arabia and the nation of Dubai is going to retaliate against America for shutting down this deal by moving some of their money, their petrodollars, into euros. And we count on, I'm not going to use the collective we anymore. I go through these phases with that collective we. This country depends on them running their money through our currency to keep a lot of what we are afloat economically. And this is a significant weapon of retaliation. I don't know what's going to happen in light of that. As Randy's been talking about and some other people out there in the world that, the Dubai company is looking for an American company they can just use as a front organization. It'll be interesting to see how this pans out. So in just a couple of minutes, what do we got coming? We've got, I want to bring this thing up. There was a study that came out. And I want to get some feedback on it. There was a study that came out that basically says that kids who are whiny, complainy, needy kids usually grow up to be conservatives. And that this is a study, and it's documented, and it's substantiated by another study. And kids who are sort of self-reliant and confident grow up to be a little more nonconforming and liberally minded. How do you like that? So we're going to get into that study a little bit when we come back. I'd like to get some calls on it, 877-520-1150, in terms of when you first realized you were a liberal, and was it something that you always were, looking back at your life to the nursery school? 877-520-1150. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show. It is AM 1150, Progressive Talk.
Have you ever smuggled drugs in your puppy's stomach? Well, neither has Mark Maron. Learn more about it at markmaron.com. I've heard it's more popular than Google. Now he's got a suspicious package. Mark Maron.
Yeah, all right. 53 past the hour. You're listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. This is the Mark Maron Show. The blog is back up. MARCMARON.com.
Thank God.
Or as Jim called it, Jim asked me, is the blog a reasonable sampling of the number of people that are listening?
Yeah, that's a question.
A reasonable sampling? Yeah, it's a sample of the people that are on the blog listening, the people that listen on the blog. Is it any way to judge how many people are listening in general? No. Sorry.
So, like, for every one blogger, there aren't 1,000 listeners?
If that makes you sleep better at night, certainly. That's exactly how many. They each represent at least 1,000 listeners here in the Los Angeles area and streaming throughout the world. Dig this, people. A study released by the Journal of Research into Personality. That sounds like quite an organization. Finds that whiny kids, more so than not, turned into rigid adults who are drawn to traditional gender roles and afraid of ambiguity. They sought reassurance in authority. In other words, they became conservatives. And this is a real study. Kids who were more confident, more so than not, turned into more self-reliant, non-conforming grown-ups who were interested in stuff that wasn't the status quo. There was a slight difference in men and women in this group, but they became liberals. The difference between, this is funny, the difference between men and women in that group in terms of the more self-reliant who were confident kids is that the men became a little more introspective, whereas the women continued to be outgoing. So it seems to me that liberal men hit a wall where they're just sort of like, what's it all worth? Who am I really? What am I doing here? I know I hit that wall, but I'm not sure that this study represents everybody necessarily, because Jim, I find you to be a little rigid, and I think that, you know, that you could have went either way at some point in time. Is that true? What? No? Don't cry. Why are you going to cry?
This is called silence, Mark.
Oh, silence? All
that's right. Very rigid. Does, you know, that's an interesting question. I'll answer it.
Yeah.
No.
Because I find that if I was a confident kid, if that is true, if I was confident, because I've played confident in my life, and I do in many areas of my life, I'm still not clear whether I really am confident or not, but I've certainly pulled it off in some areas of my life. But when I was a kid, I was certainly outgoing. I was certainly gregarious. I was certainly full of hey, look at me. I don't know if that was confident, but I certainly, from very early on, do not remember. I think the thing I have contention with here is I was always drawn towards something that would define me, but it was never conservative. It was never authoritarian models. From as early as my memory can go back, I remember reading Mad Magazine. I remember being attracted to National Lampoon. I remember seeing all the hippies and freaks in the streets when I was 6 years old and saying, I want to be them. There was never a point in my life where I saw Richard Nixon or anybody wearing a tie and thought, that guy's cool, ever. But it doesn't mean that I was necessarily confident, but I was drawn to the weirdness. I was drawn to cigarettes at a very young age. I wanted nothing more than to experience drugs. It was just, that was where my brain went. But I can't say that I was a confident kid.
See, I think, you know, Karl Rove is confident. Hitler was confident. I think confidence is just like a mask for shame.
Well, that's interesting, but I think that may be true on some level if it is just an act, but I think that some people actually have relatively decent self-esteem. I hate to admit it, because it was always my assumption that no one did, and that if they just dug a little deeper, they would find that they were crying inside and needed help. But I don't think it's true. I think that if you have at least one good parent that instilled something in you of self-worth, that you might actually have some real confidence.
I'm sure there are people out there who have genuine, real self-esteem.
Yeah, I hate those people. Man, what a drain.
It's up to us to hurt them.
Yeah, I know. Make them cry. There's nothing better than watching a control freak out. That's what I say. That's you just push and push and push until they unravel and it's a neurotic mess.
Were you a whiny guy when you were a kid?
No, I've never been whiny. Why? Why do you think?
No, I'm just asking.
No, not me. I'm not whiny. All right, look, we'll be back with Jane Bussman, and we're going to have calls later, too, about this when you realized you were a liberal. All right, 58 past.
Live from Burbank, California, home of the Earth Day tire fire, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's a wheel in the sky, and he keeps on turning. Mark Maron!
I am that. That's true. How you doing, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives? We have a sort of an interesting moment happening right now. This is the first time in about 2 years that I've sat across from a British woman on the radio. Last time it did not end well. So let's hope for the best tonight. I don't even know if you know her. I should ask you that in a minute. My guest was a performer for BBC radio shows, a writer for So Graham Norton. She's currently writing on South Park. I'd like to know how that works. She's a travel correspondent for the Times of London. Actually, she's got so many writing credits, we could take up the entire segment just listing them, people. But she also has a one-woman show at the Comedy Store next Thursday, March 30th. Jane Bussman, good evening. Thanks for coming to the show.
Nice to be here. Why are you going to hit me? What happened last time?
Oh, no, I'm not going to hit you. I worked with a woman who was from England in another show on Air America when I first started. Her name was Sue Ellicott. She was a reporter of sorts, and we just did not get along, and it became so unbearable. The thickness of our disdain for each other on the air just dripped out of the speakers to the point where people who were listening were like, I'm uncomfortable.
It went beyond comedy to just sheer unpleasantness.
It wasn't comedy. I couldn't sense any real comedy with her. But... And she certainly didn't like mine.
It sounds like a tranny name, Sue Ellicott. It's the kind of name that a transsexual would pick as a sort of, you know, I've decided to become a woman, but a doll woman, one that dresses like Princess Anne.
Maybe that was the problem. Maybe I just wasn't sensitive enough to the real issue.
But maybe she had an enormous todger and just was permanently grumpy. Perhaps she was a pre-op transsexual.
That would have made me so much more interested in her.
See, than, you didn't give her a chance.
You're right. I should have asked her.
Her.
Yeah, the right questions. Yeah. I'm going to get some flack for this. It's going to be great. So you,
I've been rude already.
No, hell no. What are you kidding? I love it. I'll take the hit. I don't mind at all. So your bio, I watched some of your short films. I read I'm not going to jump ahead. Your bio says you hate L.A. So you've been here for a few years. Now, do you hate L.A. still? Do you?
I like the people. I wouldn't mind living somewhere less. It's a desert. I don't want to live in the middle of it. It's ridiculous. It's a desert with sprinklers. Oh,
it is.
People are rude to Mexican people for no reason. But apart from that.
Yes.
And I don't know. I mean, I the reason I decided to stay was because I arrived about 1 second before September 11th. And one of the things that happened to me that morning was I went to the gym because I didn't regard it as a terribly serious business because I'm British and above that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a spin bike. And the exercise instructor got off the bike and went and hugged us all one by one and said, now, more than ever, you must spin really hard to use your positive energy to heal New York City.
That's...
I thought, well, if I can't stay here after that, I truly have no sense of humor.
That is, you can't make that up.
Guess the gym.
Crunch.
Of course.
Okay. I knew it. Well, that's, people didn't know what to do, but that is a very L.A. moment. So, like, you're at the Comedy Store with this show, and the show is about your travels. Is the arc of the show?
The arc of the show is, When I was here a couple of years ago, I was working as a celebrity journalist, and I still do it. And it's the worst job in the world.
Why?
Well, because you're basically paid to go on blind dates with beautiful millionaires who hate you, and spend an hour telling you they can't find true love, which I'm telling you means they're shagging Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
You get lied to, patronized, pooped on.
Are there a lot of people shagging Scarlett Johansson?
Well, since she had her tonsils removed, I'm sure even more. I'm sorry, that's not very nice. I interviewed her as well.
Yeah. Who are some of the people shagging Scarlett Johansson?
I couldn't possibly comment. I have to talk to a publicist and they won't tell you.
Okay, all right.
But he was rude. And basically, I was just getting increasingly depressed. And then one day, after I'd interviewed Ashton Kutcher, a British newspaper put... All right, I'm walking down Santa Monica Boulevard, eating a frozen yogurt.
Okay.
And I get this phone call, and it says, is that Jane Busman? I'm like, yeah. My name is Martin Singer, and I am a lawyer representing Ashton Kutcher, and Ashton just wants you to know that he is very upset that someone that seemed as nice as you could do something like this. I had no idea what he was talking about. Absolutely none.
Wow.
Then I find out that this story that I syndicated to a British newspaper, they'd had a lack of quotes from Ashton talking about Demi.
Mm-hmm.
So they just made one up. And the quote that they made up was something like, Demi was the hottest actress in Hollywood when I was growing up. Now it's great. I'm F asterisk 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 in her. By Jane Busman.
So they had you quoting him as saying
they
that.
Had me quoting him as saying that. So the show is the story of how the next day I went looking for a new career. And this moment sent me spiraling into a terrible determination to improve my life. And I basically ended up in a field in Uganda facing a corrupt army general who I thought was going to shoot me. And had quite a lot of reason to at that point. But basically in between, I met this incredibly attractive peacemaker and decided that I wanted to write about what he was doing.
Who is that?
His name is John Prendergast, and he works for the International Crisis Group, and he is basically a phenomenal... He was Clinton's Clinton's guy.
Ambassador to Africa, right?
He was Director of African Affairs at the White House.
I saw that short on your website.
Yes.
And I thought that was genius. That was great.
Thank you.
And he's telling a story about how George Bush pulled him aside and was very candid with him and talked to him for a while. And he didn't understand why. And one of Bush's people said he thought you were Bono.
Completely true.
Yeah, he seems like a very genuine, decent guy, that guy. So you literally had that moment here in Los Angeles where you realized that your life wasn't even as empty as the celebrities that you were interviewing.
I realized
that. It was worse.
Yeah, I realized I probably at that point could not have got shagged by Moby.
Wow. The fact that even in desperation, that would be a desirous act.
Moby would have changed his mind at the last minute.
But so now you decided to fill your life with purpose. You go to Uganda. What was your mission there? What did you see yourself doing? What did you end up doing there?
My mission was to interview John Prendergast, who was trying to end a war. Mm-hmm. And Uganda has this ludicrous war that you read it on paper, you couldn't believe it. Basically, there's the most evil man in the world. Is this guy called Joseph Kony who kidnaps children. He's kidnapped 20,000 children over 20 years, and no one's managed to stop him. I'm like, this is ridiculous. This is an utterly ludicrous concept. And Prendergast was going out there to try and broker a peace deal, to help, rather, to support the brokering of a peace deal. And I just went out there to cover it. And I just basically, it's a kind of the place where you get that you just cannot believe the stuff that goes on. I mean, I was interviewing, I was sent to interview one of Kony's 70 wives. These aren't women that went willingly. They were girls who were sort of at school one day, and they were sort of snatched and said, right, bang, your wife to Joseph Kony.
They were the children that he kidnapped, and he would rape these women to impregnate them.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's got 108 children. he is not a good dad.
Yeah.
This much
yeah.
I do know.
Yeah. So so in this process, you how did you find yourself about to be shot at?
Well, basically, the more I researched... the more I found out the government over there is hopelessly corrupt. The army, one lawyer I met was investigating the army for, I think, 20 counts of murder, 16 counts of rape, and 14 cases of torture in mm-hmm. 6 weeks, peak season.
Yeah.
and I'd sort of was just collecting more and more information, and I just really wanted to spend some time with this colonel to find mm-hmm. out what on earth they were doing, because these are our boys.
Right.
We fund Uganda's government, we give them funding, and whilst it's not, you know, military funding, it's nonetheless we're buying their groceries, and with the money they save, they go off and buy, you know, attack helicopters. So I was kind of keen to see, you know, where my tax dollar was, you know, eventually funded.
What interests were they? What interests are they protecting of ours that we are funding them?
Being Sudan, okay. I think, is their main function.
Right.
Not being a bunch of crazy fundamentalist. Psychopath, Muslims. Genocidal psychopaths.
Yeah.
I think that's their main function.
Mm.
And
so now, in the context of all this, you were able to find some humor.
I laughed till I stopped.
Come on. In terms of how your show pans out at the end, I don't want you to give away the end. But there, did you have? Was there some success?
Absolutely. I mean, I came away feeling that it would be a very simple war to at least reach some kind of a conclusion on. I mean, the
yeah.
things that were holding back a peace deal were just, I mean, like, you know, not being able to get a satellite phone to Kony so they could carry on negotiations, you know, and the government bombing peace talk venues. You know, I don't know whether that's a war crime because I'm a celebrity journalist and fairly stupid.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an outsider, it struck me as ridiculous.
That,
you know?
Yeah, it's unbelievable when you think how simple things could be if just...
Well, it's very simple. You've got a government that's half funded by, you know, foreign aid. You know, at some point we could put some pressure on them to possibly find somebody kidnapping 20,000 kids. You know, and there's if he is being funded by Sudan, we could possibly, if we ever get them to stop, you know, killing 500,000, you know, Black Christians, maybe they could think about, you know, kicking out Kony. But, you know, they're obviously admirers of his work, so they let him stay.
It's quite a government we have here, isn't it? But your government in Britain's in on it as well, aren't they?
Oh, well, it's just because we're toe-dancing cowards who will do anything we're told.
Oh,
and we
yeah.
don't wash as
yeah.
well.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I apparently you've been in L.A. long enough, so you wash.
Yes, I have a shower every week, whether I need one or not.
That's good. Once a week, good. That's great. So it's now you do a lot of traveling. I don't want to give away too much of your show. If you want to go see Jane's show, it's next Thursday at the Comedy Store, March 30th. We're talking to Jane Bussman, who on your website you have an incredibly broad range of things there. I mean, you did this documentary, but you also did an internet sitcom, the first internet sitcom.
Mm.
If the press on your website is true,
oh, it is true. I wrote it.
That reached 3 million people.
Yes.
Called The Junkies.
Yes.
Which I thought, I watched part of that. That was hilarious. This was a sitcom that was about junkies. It was funny train spotting.
Well, we called it Friends on Heroin.
Yeah.
And episode one was the one with the heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Episode two was the one with the heroin.
Yeah, oh, hilarious.
And They're the perfect sitcom characters.
And it just unfolded to the heroine.
Yeah.
It ended with the heroine.
Basically, they get up every morning. They've got a dream.
Yeah.
The dream is to get some more heroin.
Yeah. And they're living that dream.
Yeah. I mean, we have one guy who he wanted to be a boxer, but he found that by using heroin, he could numb the pain of the hit. And no other boxers were doing this.
Uh-huh. And was he ever getting out into the ring at all?
No, because his reactions were slower. Quite a lot slower.
Yeah, it was very funny. So you also, I'd like to talk to you in a minute or two about some more of your global travels. But what is it? What does one do? We've only got a minute. But what does one do when they write for South Park? Because it's not a standard writing job, is it?
Well, I think it'd be very arrogant to say that I write for South Park because it's Trey Parker's show.
Right.
I'm part of a team of people that are technical support in
so
the
you
writing.
You just hang out? And...
I can't believe it. The food I'm given is off the hook. I've never had so many cakes, brownies, and venison in the space of a week.
Venison? Yeah, that's venison. Not something you see in the green room every day, or craft services doesn't bring venison.
No, you can get anything you like. It's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Literally.
And where does this take place, these sessions?
Well, they have a palatial place on the west side, which appears to be built of sheer concrete success.
It's a great show. All right. So, look, let's finish up this conversation about your travels, maybe a little more about South Park, and more gossip. But I didn't really get any good gossip out of you.
Ah, you're worth it.
All right. It's about 20 past. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show. We're talking to Jane Bussman.
Now he's the man in the shiny black van, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. It's about 23 past. We're talking to Jane Bussman. Her website, which I didn't give out, is filthypictures.org, and there's some very funny shorts and things there. You should go watch them because she's funny. She does funny things. Also, our guest earlier, Mr. Steve Soto from the Left Coaster. .org or .com? .com. Leftcoaster.com. Apparently, I said leftcoast.com a couple of times. We want to get that straight because it's a good blog, and he was an informative cat. So before we went on break, we were talking about hanging out at the South Park compound, eating venison with Matt and Trey, just throwing ideas around, and that's how the magic happens.
All I can tell you is that this series, and I've seen 130 or more episodes of South Park now, is the funniest series they've done. It's going to be amazing, mind-boggling, and you must watch every single episode.
The one that's on right now, or is it starting?
I just missed it because I come and talk to you.
Oh, that one. Oh, one tonight. Yeah, I'm sure I TV'd it. My wife is a South Park fanatic, and it's one of the actually, when we sit and watch South Park, we both laughed at the same time, and it's a wonderful thing.
Is that
it's
what you married her?
No, because I didn't like it initially, and she was like, "You got to watch it." I was sort of a cartoon. Not phobic, but I was just like, they're cartoons. Who the hell watches cartoons after 25?
Yeah.
But she dragged me in. I think it's one of the most brilliant shows on TV.
As I say, I'm not really qualified to talk about it because I'm only a writer and I haven't been there that long, but they are the most passionate people I've worked with, I think, in my life, and I've worked on a lot of comedy shows.
I think it's genius. I think a couple of the episodes just transcend any sort of comedy I've ever seen in my life.
You'll poop yourself is the expression you're looking for.
Yeah, I'm about to do it now. Yeah. So listen, I have a friend who's a travel writer as well, and he comes up with some very odd experiences and weird stories. He travels all over the world. I know you do the same thing. What are some of the in your mind? What is by far the weirdest thing you've ever experienced out there in the great world that we live on?
Well, this is something I talk about on Thursday at my show. I just plugged it.
At the Comedy Store.
You're
going to
think I'm a thank you Comedy Store. 7 o'clock. It's early.
On Sunset Boulevard.
Yes.
The big eerie black
just
building.
One block east of La Cienega. Mm-hmm. But you're going to think I'm scatological because I'm British. But when I was in Uganda, I realized in the first room I checked into that it had a big brown streak running around the room. And I thought, this baffles me. I mean, did somebody wake up in the middle of the night and think, it's midnight? I really need to poop.
Yeah.
But it's half a mile to the toilet.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can't just leave an enormous crap here in the middle of the floor. That
right.
would be wrong.
Right.
But if I spread it out,
uh-huh.
that's somehow acceptable.
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And I thought, you know, this is, another was a man at the side of the road. This is also moderately scatological. I apologize. And he was selling what appeared to be yellow liquid.
Mm.
Empty bottles refilled with the yellow liquid. I thought, is this man selling his own pee?
Uh-huh.
I mean, do you think this was a business plan he'd had for a while?
Pee for sale.
Or did he just wake up one morning and think, what am I going to do with this record-breaking collection of pee? So it's just sort of a constant, you know, it's just sort of constant sights that seem utterly normal when you're there, and afterwards you think, no, that was wrong.
There's something weird about that.
It's just wrong.
Now, you just said that British people, are they known for being scatological? I didn't realize.
Well, it's a very small island. If we don't ruin every romantic moment by talking about poo, we'd only reproduce. And we haven't got the room. We simply have not got the room.
So what are you a political person? Are you outside? Well, you did go to Uganda to help out.
I became extraordinarily political after 2 years interviewing celebrities. It just absolutely flips your brain. If you've listened to that much rubbish and written that much rubbish, then you just have to become obsessively political. And I'd started getting into international politics just because I'd done too many interviews with Nicole Richie, who's very nice.
Right.
After I'd written quite a lot about the simple life, I really needed to go to a third
Uganda.
World country.
And was Uganda the only one that you went to?
I've been to Uganda, which is very nice. I've been to Vietnam. Very happy people. They won a war. They won several wars.
I hear Vietnam's beautiful as well.
Very nice people. Yeah. Have you been to the military museum there?
I haven't been to Vietnam, but I've only heard. I'd like to go. I haven't been there.
It's phenomenal. I would recommend any American to go there because they really love Americans.
Yeah.
I think they don't even say, we beat you. They just go, hey, come over. Look how happy we are, a moderately successful communist country.
Yeah, yeah.
We're the world's third largest producer of rice.
And by the way, ha, 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 ha.
And by the way.
Nice try.
Agent Orange, thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I'll go to Vietnam, and I probably will try to come see your show, although I work, so I don't think I'll be able to. You aren't going to run it that one night?
I'm only going to run it one night.
And then what happens with it? What are you hoping for?
What am I hoping? I'm hoping that someone would let me go and make a program about the fact that child soldiers are quite funny when you hang out with them.
Oh, yeah?
There's actually a lot of dark humor. What I'm really trying to do is I'd like to make a documentary about what John Prendergast is doing. This is a one-man mission to save the world, and he's had landmines, bombs, bullets in his face, and he still keeps going.
Yeah, I think it's a great story, and I thank you for coming down. Our guest has been Jane Bussman. The show is next Thursday, March 30th, at 7
p.m.
p.m. at the Comedy Store. What is it called?
Called Bussman's Holiday.
There you go. Thanks for coming down. We will be back. We'll have the Dick of the Day. We will talk about nursery school conservatives, and also I've got a list of Iraq failures that I found on my buddy the Ostroy Report blog. So hang out. It's about 30 past.
And now, if loving Mark is wrong, I do not want to be right. Mark Maron.
Oh, thank you, Jimmy Earl.
You're welcome, man.
Man, tomorrow, Heather Rogers is going to be here, and I'm excited about it because we're going to talk about garbage. I'm not kidding. Garbage. She wrote a book called Gone Tomorrow, The Secret Life of Garbage, and I find it fascinating. Really fascinating.
Remember Sarah Cynthia Stout?
No.
Would not take the garbage out. Remember that?
No. Oh, tell me about it.
We can move on.
No.
It was
tell
just
me,
a thing Dr. Demento used to have on.
Oh, I didn't listen to Dr. Demento.
These guys know. Yeah, Brendan knows what I'm talking about. Look at him.
And Chris.
What a nerd.
Chris from
what
Kansas knows.
Chris from Kansas.
Now, do you want to do it?
What?
The Cynthia Snout thing?
I can't
No,
do
no,
it.
I'm not the poem. Is that all you know about it?
No, that's all I know.
Take it easy.
20 years,
all
okay?
Right,
Don't put me on the spot.
All right. We here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society, so every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Folks, in light of the huge success of The Da Vinci Code as a book, 40 million sold, Christian groups are not going to boycott the movie. No, they have another plan. They're going to mobilize what they are calling truth squads. They are producing books, documentaries, DVDs, websites, and study guides to counteract what they see as the destructive misrepresentation of the story of Christ and the Catholic Church. So instead of jumping up and down with signs and screaming in front of movie theaters like packs of fanatical retards, they have a full press publicity plan that could, if anything, make them some money. Just the fact that one of these Christo-fascist zombie brigade leaders said, quote, "While we recognize the right to present a good yarn, we're concerned the mix of fact and fiction is sure to lead many to question the Bible's integrity, its message, and Christianity's impact of history," end quote. So let me get this straight. They're afraid that the historical momentum they've achieved of repressing, controlling, killing, stealing, and exploiting in the name of a God that is the center of arguably a completely fictional story will be threatened by another story that might reveal that fiction and provide some speculative insight into covenants designed to keep truth hidden from delusional followers so religious institutions can maintain their money and power. By any means necessary, maintain the lie. Very organized religion, very Republican, very dickish. For fighting fiction with fiction and protecting one of the biggest, oldest con games on earth makes the Christian Truth Squads the Mark Maron Show's dicks of the day. Whew, there you go. So wait, let me do this in, because I thought this was a pretty good list myself. I get an email from the guys at the Ostroy Report. That's OstroyReport.blogspot.com. And it's basically what he's calling an Iraq war scorecard. And I thought it was a pretty good list sometimes lists work. And so he's basically, the angle here is that George Bush is claiming success. Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, they're all claiming successes in Iraq. So he's got a list here of the where are the successes is basically it. One, Bush invaded Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction. Failure. Bush based intelligence on Ahmed Chalabi's claims. Failure. Bush sent in too few troops. Failure. Bush ignored advice of General Shinseki and other experts. Failure. Bush grossly underestimated the insurgency. Failure. Bush believed we'd be greeted as liberators. Failure. Operation Shock and Awe. Failure. Mission accomplished. Failure. Pre-war cost estimated at $50 to $60 billion. Big failure. Bush sent under-equipped soldiers into battle. Failure. The insurgency would die with Saddam's sons, Uday and Qusay. Another failure. Handing over of sovereignty would change things. Nope. The elections would produce a functioning democracy. Uh-uh. Winning Fallujah battle would be critical milestone. No. Insurgencies in its last throes. Failure. Iraq became the new headquarters of terrorism. That happened. Iraq quagmire destabilized the entire Middle East. Yes, it has. That's another failure. 20,000 dead, 30,000 injured, maimed, $250 billion spent. That represents another failure. Iraq's been a major distraction from the war on terror. Nope. Reconstruction effort. Failure. Iraq breaks out into civil war. That's a failure. More Iraqi deaths than ever before. Failure. Bush now admits troops will be there long after 2008. Failure. How do you like them apples, my friend? I didn't take the calls I wanted to take. I should probably put that out there because I wanted to, in terms of when you found out, given that study that I referred to earlier, if you've been listening to the whole show, about how it turns out the kids were whiny kids and I think needy and complainy and rat-thinky. Grew up to become conservatives and more self-reliant kids or confident kids. And by confident, I just mean at least somebody who was self-aware, introspective, kind of went by the beat of their own drummer there, became more liberal kids. And I started looking back on my life, and I just wonder if you can remember the moment or the event that made you realize that you were a liberal. 877-520-1150. The event that made you realize that you were a liberal. 877-520-1150. Do you remember yours, Jim? Do you remember?
I think it was when Bobby Kennedy was killed, and then we all had to sit in the auditorium at our school and watch Nixon be sworn in, and that just made me sick.
And you felt it tangibly? How old were you?
That was 68, 60, yeah. I was 9, 8 or 9.
It's interesting when these things happen when you're so young, yet your brain makes choices and you realize who the bad guys are at that age. I think you're more intuitive then than you probably are as an older person.
Yeah. We took a trip across the U.S. and we stopped in Salt Lake City, Utah, probably in 66 or
yeah.
So. And we went into this barber shop and TV, there were riots going on, for civil rights riots.
Yeah.
And they got the barbers are all talking, using the N-word and everything. And I look at my dad and I'm going, hey, they can't say, and he gives me a look, shut up.
Don't make issue here.
No, don't say anything because we would have been killed, I think.
Wow. 877-520-1150. When was your moment where you realized that being a liberal or that you had a heart or that you cared about people? What was that moment? What did that look like for you? Cassandra in Hollywood.
Yeah, in 1984, I lived in San Francisco. It was my first election to vote in, and I thought for sure there was no way that Reagan would get reelected.
Right.
I thought nobody I know is going to vote for Reagan. There's no way.
Yeah.
And that landslide happened, and I realized that I lived amongst an island of people.
Right, that you were surrounded by freaks.
I guess so. I mean, the rest of the world, I guess, was freaks because we knew that he was a bad guy.
I know. I felt that same way about this last election.
Oh, yeah.
I just mind-blowing. Like, the day after that last election, now, given that it hinged on some stinky math, but just in terms of numbers, yeah. I could not believe it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for calling, Cassandra.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Bye. My moment, really... I think my moment really was when my mother took me to hear McGovern speak when he was running. So I guess that was, 72? So I was 9. And when she explained to me what he was talking about, what he represented, and why we were Democrats, I think that might have been my moment. Let's talk to Greg in Highland Park. Hey, Greg, what's up? When was your moment?
I was 13. And I would listen to the Mort Saul show on Channel 11.
On TV?
On TV.
I didn't even know he had a show.
He had a show. It was a great, great show on Channel 11 at 11 o'clock at night on Friday, I think.
How old were you?
I was 13.
Uh-huh.
And he would talk about the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
And I remember I had Lyndon Johnson stickers on my school books.
Right.
And, it was like entering another world.
Right, yeah.
Because the evidence there was so overwhelming that even a 13-year-old kid could see what was going on.
So it was at that moment you realized that
it was an epiphany.
A hypocrisy and that there was a whole other reality.
Exactly, a whole other reality. And I've never gone back.
Well, thanks a lot for calling.
And you know what?
What?
He would be a great person to get on the show.
Yeah,
I he's around.
We have a common friend. I think I might try to get him on the show. I know he's still out there doing that. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Okay, bye.
Take care. Yeah, it's wild that's part of it. That's part of the whole experience is that you see this secret doorway and you realize like, man, that, what I'm being presented might be completely a lie. Let's go to, Bruce in Glendora. Bruce, how are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm good, man. When was your moment, dude?
Good. 82. I was out of work. Reagan was in office. Unemployment was up around 8 or 9%. I had go down to local delicatessen, buy a salami sandwich, make it last for 3 days. Money was that tight.
Wow.
And I see Reagan on TV going, what do you mean unemployment? Unemployment? I just picked up the want ad. There was plenty of jobs in the want ad this morning. You're going to have to pick yourself up by your bootstraps.
Oh, man. So that's interesting because this is the first call that – thanks for sharing that with us, man.
This is the first call where actually you hear what we're all assuming will eventually happen with people that voted for this president out of fear, is that the economic realities of Republican policy are going to come back to kick them all in the ass and wake them up as to what they did in terms of who they voted for. Then this is one of those situations. I don't know if he voted for Reagan, but it's one of those situations where economic policy really woke somebody up, as opposed to, you know, ideological issues, which is what I responded to. Hey, Mark in L.A., what's up, Mark?
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
I'm good, man. What was your moment?
Well, I think when it actually happened for me is when I moved out of the South about half my lifetime ago and moved to L.A. and just was exposed to a different point of view.
To fun? You're exposed to fun?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And much better weather, too.
Yeah, that's interesting. So because of your geography, everything was so limited to a certain point of view, and once you got up here, it was like, bam!
Well, I just was exposed to a little bit things that were a little bit different and less of a narrow-minded view that I was exposed to previously. But you know what was the litmus test for me? It was when I was a kid and watched All in the Family, I related with Archie, and then I remember at some point in my early 20s watching reruns and all of a sudden relating with Meathead. So
you knew something had changed. Thanks for your call, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. That's funny. That TV will just reveal that to you. Should we do one more? Yeah, let's do one more. How about Ruth in Los Angeles? Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm just great, thank you. I mean, I'm not great at all, but I just love your. I just love the whole Radio America. It's just fantastic.
Oh, thanks. So, when was your moment where you realized?
Well, I was about 5 years old, and I grew up in Mobile, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things. One is I was waiting in a train station, and I asked my mother how come there was one waiting room for white people and one waiting room for colored people. Couldn't understand it. Also, when I would ride in the car and see people working out in the field, and generally black people sweating and everything, I thought, this is not right. Something is wrong with this world.
Right.
So I think I was a liberal as of the age of 5.
Well, God, that's a great story. Thanks for calling, Ruth.
Okay,
bye-bye. Bye. Man, I can't imagine, growing up in the South. Well, look, folks, are we going to have time to do his poem? We're going to do a little Jim Poche after this. Thanks for your calls. It was certainly great talking to you. It's about 50 past. Stay with us on the Mark Maron Show.
Stay tuned for 3 minutes of crap. That's right. Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next.
Welcome back, people. Welcome to Mark Maron's show's Poetry Corner. Tonight I introduce you to the poetic stylings of Mr. Jim Earl.
Thank you very much, Mark. This is a poem I wrote in San Francisco when I had roommates. Mm-hmm. It's called Refrigerator Notes. We're all adults here. If we all do our dishes, maybe we can keep this place clean. Please be considerate. Signed, Trish. I appreciate your guys' efforts to recycle, but I'm tired of seeing bottles and cans in the bin with their labels still on. I don't need to tell you this. Thanks, spelled THX. Yesterday I walked into the living room to find the drapes open. Please keep them shut. Everything is fading. Trish. People, I don't like these notes any more than you do. How old are we? Last night in my dreams, I found one male whisker in the sink. There's always one male whisker in the sink in my dreams. Please be considerate. We're all adults here. Everything is fading. The Kleenex next to the garlic roaster is mine. I ask you, if that runs out, with what will I cover my soup? Thanks. Has anyone seen Karen? There's a bad smell coming from her room and her door won't open. Meeting at 8 a.m. Last night I dreamt my liver was torn out and devoured by Link from the Mod Squad. Please be considerate. Everything is fading. House meeting 8 a.m. Trish. Thank you, Mark.
That was genius. Genius. Thank you, Jim. That was great.
Yeah.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's special New York edition of the Short Order News. The New York Police Department is installing 505 surveillance cameras throughout the city to help keep track of criminal activity. The New York Police Department argues that if they had that many cameras back in 1997, they could have prevented Abner Louima from attacking a broomstick with his rectum. New York University has once again topped Harvard and Yale as the dream school of high school students in the nation. Founded in 1831, NYU enrolls about 39,000 students a year in such varied fields as trust fund depletion, double parking your Humvee, and spotting Sam Waterston. A coyote braved the wilds of Manhattan for 2 days before being captured this morning in Central Park. Police are now trying to figure out how the coyote was able to get a permit to drive a cab. Can't follow that broomstick with his rectum. There's no way. That's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. Oh, man. That was great poetry, Jim. Really enjoyed that.
No, thank you. Yeah, it came from the heart.
It was a meditation almost. And I kind of got lost in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Are you going to come by tomorrow and do the show with me?
Yeah, I'll be here.
It's going to be a long one, right, Brendan? Long show tomorrow? Got a long one for you. It's a super duper extra cheese edition of the Mark Maron Show. So the man behind crooksandliars.com, John Amato, will be here. Also, Matt Taibbi will talk about his Rolling Stone report on Jack Abramoff. Go read that, man. Taibbi's piece on Abramoff, awesome. NBC's Michael Bocher. Is that how you say it? Live from Iraq. We got a new connection in Iraq. I'm looking forward to talking to him. Plus, a liberal confessional and Jim's Wheel of Anger. So, good night, sheeple.